12.
"What are you waiting for?" Arthur says, straining to be heard while not wanting to draw the cat's attention back to him. "Shoot the dang thing!" "Cat's just doing what cats do," I tell him, without taking my eyes away from the feline. While I haven't ever stared down a mountain lion before, I know enough about them to not act rashly. First of all, the cat is far faster than me, and I'm not entirely sure I could draw and shoot it dead faster than it could charge and wrap its jaws around my face. Cassie might be able to gun it down while I'm assaulted, but not until after those inch-long canines have punctured my skull. I also don't want to kill it. Drawn by the scent of blood, it really is just fulfilling its natural role. The only reason Arthur was in danger is because Chafin left him tied up, surrounded by the smell of death. "Fan out to the sides," I tell the others.
"What in the hell for?"
Levi asks. "Intimidation," I say, hoping the cat is smart enough to know when it's outnumbered. I'm not sure what year it is now, but people have lived here long enough that I'm confident the cat knows we're dangerous. It might also know we're delicious, which could have something to do with its reluctance to back off. The cat's eyes dart to the others as they step out on either side of me, their feet crunching loudly in the crusted snow.
"Bare your teeth," I say. "Growl."
Feeling a bit ridiculous, I follow my own advice. Levi groans.
"This is like gall-dang drama class."
Between growls, Cassie says, "You took a drama class?"
"There was a girl involved,"
Levi says before joining in. The cat's ears fold flat as it takes a step backward. Our intimidation tactic is working, but it's also backing the cat straight toward Arthur, whose eyes are widening in abject terror.
"Shoot it!"
he screams, regaining the cat's full attention. I feel a sudden pressure on my hip and then a shift of weight as my handgun is pulled up and away. The weapon rises, aimed toward the cat, which is standing in front of Arthur. I grasp the weapon as the trigger is pulled, angling it up. A single round blasts through the air, punching into the tree bark a foot above Arthur's head. The sudden report makes the cat flinch, but it doesn't retreat. Then Levi steps forward, raises his arms in the air, and shouts,
"Roar!"
The already spooked lion bolts, disappearing over a ridge in three long strides. With a twist of my hand, I disarm Chafin, and in the same quick move, I deliver a backhanded slap to the side of his face. The blow is hardly a punch, but solid enough to bowl the man over. He lands on the ground, stunned and rubbing his cheek.
"Thank Jesus," Arthur says, struggling against his bonds. "Y'all came back for me."
"And you sold us out,"
Levi says, crouching beside the man, knife in hand. It's the same knife he used to kill Chafin's man and save Cassie's life. Arthur eyes the blade.
"About that."
He looks around the forest at the dead men and then at Cassie and me. He's trying to concoct a story, but he's coming up blank.
"You got nothing,"
Levi says, leaning in with a knife.
"Now hold on a minute, I just..."
Levi slices, making Arthur jump with fright. When Levi stands up, sheathing the blade, the only thing cut is the rope binding the hairy outlaw to the tree. Arthur pulls his hands free, staring at them as a smile spreads.
"What are you doing?"
Chafin says with a groan, pushing himself up.
"Man's a criminal.
Seeing as how you were about to murder me a few minutes back, I'd say you fellas have more in common than not."
I holster my gun, buttoning it in place this time. I motion to Arthur. At least this man was fighting for a cause that affects him and his own in the present day, and not a familial tiff that should have died out decades ago.
It occurs to me that it's entirely possible we've been transplanted to the years during which the Hatfield and McCoy fighting was at its fiercest.
"You got no love for your family?"
Chafin says, climbing to his feet. "No respect for your name, for your history?"
"Only family that matters to me are the ones I can remember," I say, thinking of my father and my younger self, somewhere in these frozen woods, confused and afraid. I've always pictured my father the way I remember him, strong, determined, confident. But now that I'm grown and projecting those qualities to those around me, I understand how most of the time it's an act. The sound of crunching feet and cracking branches turns me around. I see a flash of Arthur sprinting downhill. Then he's out of sight. Levi points in the direction Arthur fled.
"So yeah, think it remembers the mountain lion that dang near ate him?
Or notice that it's not summer anymore?" Cassie asks, with just a hint of a smile. I'm actually sure he's keenly aware of both. Means he's more afraid of something else. I look to Chafin, intending to level a Southern Baptist, condemnation-filled gaze at him, but I don't get the chance. Chafin's head bursts in time with a rifle report. The red explosion is almost patriotic, flaring out like fireworks. I dive behind a tree, unaware of who shot, how far away they are, or how many people we're dealing with this time. Arthur wasn't running from us or Chafin. He must have seen what was coming and decided to bolt rather than warn us, despite the fact that we saved his life, twice now by my count.
Don't know who in tarnation you bootlickers are, but you can get the blazes off my land or I'll be forced to deal with you all in...
I draw my handgun slowly, glancing at Cassie. She is armed and ready to fight again, but she looks weary and disheartened. I understand how she feels. Is everyone in this damn mountain going to try killing us?
What the dickens?
He's noticed the bodies. While he's clearly not opposed to taking a life in brutal fashion, he wasn't prepared to come across the scene of a battle. And to be honest, I wasn't really prepared to fight one or to return to the scene to fight a second.
Look here!
The man's voice is raised an octave higher, no doubt realizing that we've got the potential to be as dangerous, if not more so, than him.
You two Marys and your colored strumpet can vacate this here mountain, or I'll be forced to lay you down beside your friend there.
The threat lacks force and reveals his hand. I'll be forced. The man is alone and, judging by the slight slur in his voice, somewhat inebriated. That makes him dangerous, but also vulnerable. The drink doesn't seem to have affected his aim any, but it hasn't helped with his decision-making. Firstly, I say, trying to emulate the man's accent, which is a strange mix of Southern, Scottish, and Irish. The man you shot wasn't my friend. Truth is, he was a lawman, and I'm glad you put a bullet in him.
Drat,
the man says, no doubt thinking Chafin's death is going to bring him more trouble than he bargained for. I don't bother telling him Chafin's either a child in this time or not yet born. Secondly, are you old Pete Boone by chance? The man's string of whispered curses are answer enough. Pete Boone was an infamous bootlegger, and I only know about him because my father used to tell me stories about him when we hunted these woods. Told me a fair share of other stories, too. About Indian burial grounds, buried treasure, and Civil War battles. Said the mountain hadn't known peace from the time of the dinosaurs until his father's generation. Seems my father's oral history was more accurate than I'd ever believed. Tales of Pete Boone, said to be the great-great-great-grandfather of Black Creek's most reclusive hermit, Bear Boone, were usually humorous and full of drunken antics. Murder had never been part of the lore, but clearly the man has no qualms about taking a life. Cassie catches my eyes, questioning what I'm doing with a stare. None of these people are our enemies, I whisper. I don't want to kill anyone we don't have to. She motions to Chafin's body. He murdered him without warning, without cause. I offer a slow nod and say, far as I know, there's only two people in these woods that haven't killed anyone. She doesn't need to ask who I'm talking about. I doubt the thought of my child self and my father is too far from the forefront of her mind. I'm here on business, I say, from North Carolina. Been sent looking for the best whiskey in the South. Something not yet on the market. People I work for are fixing a bottle and market what I bring 'em. Along the way, I've heard tell that your corn whiskey is the finest. There's a silent moment. Then he says,
Apple brandy ain't half bad neither.
Then we can talk business, or are we gonna trade bullets?
You sound like a man with bollocks, Boone says. Step on out. Let me have a gander at you. Then I'll decide.
Don't, Cassie says. Her concern is legitimate. Boone could gun me down the moment I step out, but I don't think he will. The man eventually made a small fortune from his bootlegging, lost it all to gambling later in life, so my father says, but his ambitions were always grand. As long as he thinks my claims are legitimate, we shouldn't have anything to worry about. I step out from behind the tree, handgun holstered, rifle aimed toward the ground. When I look up the mountain, the first thing I see is Boone's half-toothed grin. The second is the 10 men flanking him on either side, all of them armed with revolvers.
Well, shit, Boone says, and then he turns to the man beside him. What are the odds we'd find another man wearing fancy clothes?
He squints at me.
You kind of look like him, too.